up, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you are listening to All Ball, All Basketball, All the Time. My guest this week is a legend in the state of Iowa. He's been a coach. He's now a broadcaster with the Big Ten Network. He is Jess Settles. Great dude, awesome stories, and a really amazing career where he played not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, but 6 years. 6 years at Iowa because of major back problems caused not playing the NBA. But former Mr. Basketball, state of Iowa, Jess Settles will be our guest. Couple of quick hoop thoughts as we're getting ready to watch the World Cup. And we're trying to decipher Kobe Bryant versus Shaquille O'Neal. Is there beef? And I don't know if you say no new beef, but this is clearly beef. This is how it was with Shaq. Shaq didn't come in shape. Phil didn't, you know, crack the whip to get him in shape. One of the big reasons they didn't have two-a-days when Shaq was on the Lakers was because Shaq wasn't in shape and Phil didn't want to kill him. There's no sense in having crazy training camp when you're going to be playing all the way till June. It's one of the genius parts of Phil Jackson's coaching that people won't give him enough credit for. They just won't. So the first thing is, and this is really, really important, neither Kobe nor Shaq are telling lies. Now, I do think that Shaq is a little bit overplaying the had Kobe passed more against the Pistons. Let's not go into the Pistons series and all the things that were going wrong there. But the bigger issue is Shaq could have been the greatest player of all time or the biggest, greatest big man of all time. That's what everybody with the Lakers, and I was with the Lakers in three free agent camps and in the summer league, would always say. But he likes being Shaq. Movies, TV shows, music videos, hanging out, big personality, and it's worked for him. He's a genius in business, and he's a great dude. But you can be a great dude and not be completely locked in on being the greatest ever, not being wired the way that Kobe was wired. Right? Kobe was wired kind of like a serial killer. But he was also wired like a guy who, you know, more like a backup point guard. I want to get everything I possibly can out of my body. Every amount of potential I want to get out. Now, was he selfish? Sure, Shaq's right there. He was selfish. He would take bad shots. He could be hard to play with. He could be hard to manage as a personality and an ego. But Kobe worked his ass off, and he was always in shape. Shaq, naturally incredibly gifted. Fast, quick, strong, you name it. And, oh yeah, by the way, huge. You ever met Shaq? One of the hugest human beings you'll ever meet. Great, smart personality. But when the season was over, he was done. He was shutting it down for a bit. He wasn't about developing his game. He would develop his game as they went. And that's why he never became a great free throw shooter. That's why he never developed, you know, much of a perimeter game. And oh yeah, by the way, yes, Shaq, you can have, it doesn't mean you have a bad work ethic, but he wouldn't guard pick and rolls. I mean, how many guys would play against the Lakers shooting point guards like Mike Bibby? Like Trevor Hudson, come out and hit shots where Shaq was supposed to be. So there's no new beef, but this is in fact the beef, and this is part of what led to the breakup of Shaq and Kobe and why the team sided with Kobe. Right? Shaq had more potential. Shaq had greater dominance. But Kobe, you get everything you can out of Kobe. Kobe got everything he could out of his body. I don't think you can say the same for Shaq.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Dwight Howard has just signed with the L.A. Lakers. And you get people who clown Dwight Howard signing with the L.A. Lakers. They put some parameters on it. Let me tell you what I've heard about Dwight Howard signing. I heard his workout was the best workout of any big guy that the Lakers had in their building. On their roster, not on their roster. That he's lost 25 pounds. Here was the quote. Where is it here? From a Lakers front office guy. If my body looked like Dwight Howard's, I would never put on a shirt. They said he was fast. He was agile. He was bouncy. He looked amazing. And here's the thing about Dwight Howard being a weird dude. He is. There's lots of weird dudes in the NBA. So I don't know if it works. I do know they need him to play. You know, there is kind of a sense of, well, you don't need him for backup. Like, no, you probably need 20 minutes a game out of him. You know, JaVale McGee's only good when you play him 15 to 18 minutes. And then they're going to play Anthony Davis some small ball five. Maybe little LeBron at small ball five. But they're going to need him. And then you have DeMarcus Cousins. And as good, as talented as Cousins was, now with the arrest warrant for him, because of the threat he made to the mother of his child, like, and I do understand there's some nuance to it. She didn't want to bring the kid to his wedding. I mean, there's a lot going on there, a lot. But he can't say what he said. Does that mean he'll be out of the league forever? No, but this it was a conclusion that many people might have seen coming because of his behavior previously in his career. I'll only tell you this. I don't know if DeMarcus just fakes it more or fakes it better than he used to, but I've run into a couple times, and he's been incredibly gracious. But I kind of think that this sort of thing, in addition to the lack of work ethic at practice, you know, like, we could have seen this coming a mile away. It's really unfortunate because he was a really talented guy, and now he suffered three straight injuries on one leg, and now he's facing a charge. And do I think he meant it? Probably not. But the fact that the call was being recorded tells you it probably wasn't the first time he said something of the kind. I don't know if DeMarcus Cousins is done in the NBA, but it wouldn't stun me if it's really, really hard to find him a home in the NBA in the long-term future. All right, so look, this is the first all ball now that a lot of kids are back into college. And I wrote an article for ESPN.com a long time ago, and I think I need to tinker with it and redo it a little bit and put it out in The Athletic, or if they don't want it, I'll put it out just on Facebook or whatever. But the idea is this. It's for freshmen. And I do think it works a little bit for high school, but it actually works best, obviously, for college. It's the idea that you got to unpack. And you can use this when you go to a new job. I've taken jobs where I didn't have a great feeling about it, and I didn't emotionally unpack until maybe it was too late. But it's a couple of tips for basketball players to succeed once they get to college. To have the best freshman year possible. You're going to be a little lonely. Less lonely now, obviously, than when I went to school, because, hell, now you can FaceTime everybody. You know, travel seems a whole lot easier, but, like, cell phones bring you so much closer to people. Maybe too close. But you can't get FOMO from other people's social media. Oh, man, hey, I want that. Why don't we have that facility? Why don't I have that workout? Why am I not playing as much as this guy? The big key is lock in on your studies. Get ahead early. Right? Tell my own kids this. Because when the coaches go around and find out how you're doing in school, if you're on the border, unless you're a superstar, they're going to bail on you. Because they can't depend on you to be available second semester. One key component to ability is availability. And if they think, man, this dude ain't going to be eligible second semester, he's going to flunk out at the end of the year, you think they're going to invest in you in a basketball court? Of course not. You need to be kind to managers. Those managers just want to be part of the program and likely want to be a coach in the future. And you know what? Once you get to February and you need some new gear, who's going to take care of you? The manager. So I think those are two key parts to it. I think you got to get your rest. You got to eat right. Why do you have to do both? Because when you get your rest, when you eat right, you're going to be a better practice player. You're a better practice player, you make more shots in practice. Make more shots in practice, you'll get more opportunities in games, and the rest is up to you. And I think the big key is you just have to continue whatever work ethic it took to get you where you got. Heat that up, and if not, grow it. Grow it. When you get tired from workouts, from lifting and sore, and you feel like you can't go late night in the gym and get your 100, 200, 500, 1,000 shots up now that you have those guns or Dr. Dish machines, now's the time. And to keep that going during the season. Because the guy who takes the most shots is going to make the most shots. That's the way it goes. And the last thing is, don't worry about the league. Don't worry about the tournament. Don't worry about anything. Worry about the here and now. Be present. Unpack.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
All right, let's welcome him in. He's Jess Settles. He's former Mr. Basketball in the state of Iowa. I was actually looking through and researching, getting ready to have you on, the Mr. Basketballs. And Fred Hoiberg was 91. Some dude I've never heard of, Eric Pothoven from Pella Christian, yeah, was 92. Why don't you tell me?
Yeah.
Rafe was the year after you. Adam Spanich was 95. I actually played with Adam in the IBA, and he was at Oral Roberts for a time. He was USC Oral Roberts. Justin Wessel, Dean Oliver, Nick Collison, Kirk Heinrich, Glenn Worley. Like, there's been some really, really, really good players. All right, you grew up where in Iowa?
I grew up in Winfield, Iowa, a town of 1,000. I lived on a farm north of Winfield, Iowa, about 45 minutes south of the University of Iowa. So it was a community. We did not have any stoplights. I always grew up wanting to play for Iowa, Doug. And when I went to the five-star basketball camp in Pittsburgh, because there weren't any pickup games or any competition where I was growing up, that's when it kind of ignited my fire to get better, to drill, and to see that I could compete against better players around the country.
Okay, but you're skipping some steps. So Winfield, Iowa, wheat farm, corn farm, what kind of farm?
Corn and beans, and I still farm with my dad. About a month from now, I'll be sitting in a John Deere tractor and combine for a couple months straight, going back and forth, feeding the world, feeding you, Doug. I know you like corn on the cob.
I do.
And
I like soy. I like soy products as well. You know, like
okay, there you go.
And then they're doing some stuff with peas now. You know, those Beyond Meat burgers with peas. Okay, so
Don't eat that. Eat the real meat. Bro.
I do
don't
like real meat. I do like real meat.
Thank you.
But you know, some stuff you gotta try all kinds of. Okay, so I'm picturing like how many acres growing up?
I grew up on a 200-acre farm.
Okay, so 200 acres. I'm picturing like grain silo, barn.
Yep.
Hoop on the barn, freestanding hoop,
absolutely,
a la Hoosiers. Like no, but not absolutely. Tell me, give me the picture of what the farm looked like in the 80s.
So your typical 1890s farmhouse. It's been remodeled like six times over the years. Goes from that kind of cheap siding with no insulation to now, as you know, you get a little more modern. You get the regular siding. You've got the detached garage with the hoop on the side of it. You've got the hog sheds right next to the garage. So literally, if you shot the ball at a poor angle and it ricocheted off the right way, it would end up in a manure pit, and you'd have to go hose the ball off before you could shoot again. So it made you really concentrate on your jumper. We had a few horse pens, three or four grain bins, a machine shed, and all kinds of older tractors, combines, planters, things like that sitting around. Tried to mow them the best job we could, but just your typical great Iowa family farm.
So why not football? Like your cousin's George Kittle's, you're 6'7". Like you look, even now you look at, when you walk into a room, guys would say like, oh, you played tight end or you played offensive line for, you're not heavy, but I mean, you look like, almost feels like that's your build. Why basketball, not football?
I just love the game. I played football in middle school, and it was so violent. And I was a tough kid, but it just seemed like every time you come back from a game, you had a sprained finger, a rolled ankle. We weren't very good at that time, so we got slaughtered a lot of games. Actually, Bob Stoops, I saw him at a charity event a few years ago, and he said the same thing, Doug. He's like, "Man, you really messed up. You should have played tight end."
Yeah.
And even who just went into the Hall of Fame, the tight end?
Tony Gonzalez, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Gonzalez. So Tony, I played against him when he was at Cal and I was at Iowa. And we were standing on the court and he just starts staring at me at the free throw line. He says, "Jess, man, you really messed up. You're in the wrong sport." So you're not wrong in that. But I just love basketball more. Seems like everybody else in the family plays football. We had a we were all pretty big and pretty strong. I never got the speed gene, so I think I made the right decision. Although, if I had it to do all over again, I might have gone the baseball route and been a pitcher. It's just a lot less demanding physically.
Yeah, I'm a 6'7" pitcher. You reach halfway to home plate. Plus Iowa, there you go. Build it. They will come. Okay, so your high school was how big? How many kids did you graduate with?
I think we had about 25 to 30 in my class. Very small. But had a great opportunity at a small school to kind of play all five positions, to learn the game that way. Got to play varsity as a freshman like everybody did. There were no cuts. Everybody got a uniform who went out. And so the summer, the Nike camp, the five-star camps and all those were critical to my development. And my mom was a pretty good basketball player in high school as well, and she taught me a lot. But I had
six
to
on,
leave
six on six, right?
State.
Six on six, right?
Six on six, that legendary six-on-six game. That's what I grew up watching. Our women's teams were outstanding at Winfield. They won most of their games, and then our men's team struggled. But, yeah, I saw the beginning and end of six-on-six basketball, and then obviously the way the game's changed today, I was a part of a good era.
Yeah, the old fan back. Did you have a fan backboard, or did you have the full backboard?
Yes. We had the fan backboard stayed in Iowa, I think, until the mid-90s. I mean, I played on one all 4 years. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And we still don't have a shot clock. We still don't have a shot clock in the state of Iowa, believe that or not. I don't know if you guys do out there or not.
I think that they do in high school basketball. We didn't when I was a kid. Who is Eric Pothoven, and how did he win Mr. Basketball the year in between you and Fred Hoiberg and Rafe LaFrenz?
He was an elite scorer out of Pella, and I believe they won a state title. He deserved it. He was the top player in the state at that time. But of all those guys on the list, the biggest problem is, Doug, that most of them, other than Dean Oliver there, Glenn Worley, myself, everybody else didn't end up at Iowa.
Right.
And you start talking about Heinrich and Collison, especially Rafe LaFrenz. Those guys all went to Kansas, as you know, and changed the course of history for the state of Iowa and Iowa basketball. So that was really devastating to the Iowa program, as well as Iowa State. But you just can't, in a state this size, you can't lose legendary players like that. They both came from great families, and all of them had wonderful pro careers as well.
Okay, so you show up at, was there any thought to you going out of state to play in college?
Okay, so you'll be fascinated by this, and I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but the two of us, we almost ended up on the same team at Notre Dame. Have you ever thought about this?
No, I know all this, but I don't think people will believe it, but
Fran McCaffrey and John McLeod heavily recruited me. I ended up coming down to Michigan, Iowa, and Notre Dame. I grew up a Hawkeye fan, obviously close to the university. Loved the Hawks, but I was so intrigued by that Notre Dame degree, John McLeod and his pro system.
Yeah.
My football weekend at the University of Notre Dame was just unbelievable. It was off the charts. Got to meet Julia Roberts, Dick Vitale, all those guys. I mean, they really sold the program. And I just was hesitant. They ended up giving scholarships to, I believe, Marcus Young, and was it Gorsch that you played with 1 year?
Gotch.
Matt Gorsch?
Matt Gotch,
yeah. Yes, excuse me, Matt Gotch. So those guys took the two scholarships. I even remember meeting with Fran about possibly doing a partial scholarship on baseball, being on the baseball team. But then a few years later, you come in there, and I'm looking at the roster a while back, and I think it would have been Ryan Hoover,
yeah,
Doug Gottlieb,
yeah,
Pat Garrity,
yeah,
and Jeff Settles in the mid-90s running up down the court. It would have been unbelievable.
Unbelievable list of white dudes. Like, the whitest dudes ever.
Unbelievable.
We had, so Antoni Weish, who's assistant at Lehigh, I'll never forget, we played Georgetown. This is like a big Monday. They're ranked number 2 in the country. They have Allen Iverson. They have, you know, Junkyard Dog. They got Victor Page, they have, they're just loaded. And I'll never forget, Iverson, we're at like the free throw line the first half, and Antoni Weish is our first sub in. We started 5 white dudes. And here comes Tone. Tone lines up next to Iverson. He's on one side of Iverson, I'm on the other side. And at that time, Iverson's nickname was Bubba Chuck, and he's like, "What's up, Chuck?" And they kind of dapped a little bit. He's like, "Yo, man, what's up with all the white dudes in Notre Dame? Y'all got a rule? You can't start a brother?" And we were just dying,
oh, no,
dying, dying laughing. Okay, so you show up as a freshman at Iowa. Dr. Tom Davis is correct. Your coach. But forgive me if I'm wrong. I feel like Kingsbury might have had a bigger image. Like, I know he wasn't, like, you averaged like 15-7 your first year, but it feels like people were more, the Kingsbury was like a, he had like a Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield. Tell me what Chris Kingsbury was like to play with.
Yeah, that's, you have such a fascinating memory. I mean, that's exactly right. That's a great way to break him down. He came in as a McDonald's All-American, arguably the best shooting guard in the country as far as shooting the basketball. I think he won the three-point competition at the Nike camp and was by far the best shooter there for our class. He was early, maturing, very strong, extremely competitive, one of the better passers I've ever played with as well. But as you know, when you're just a true shooting guard, that transition, especially back then, was so hard to make. Now, those of us who were forward centers could get cheap baskets throughout the game. I mean, you can get a couple offensive rebounds, a couple tip-ins, and you felt good about your game. Where shooting guards just, you had to knock in shots, and that was about the only way you could score because you were getting mugged half the game and grabbed and held, and you just couldn't get easy baskets. Obviously, if you're playing point guard, you have the ball in your hand. You can get a little confidence throughout the game. But he was tremendous to play for, struggled a little bit his freshman year, but then when we came back the next couple of years, I mean, he was an all-league guy, ended up getting a few tryouts in the NBA. But I roomed with him, and, you know, for a naive kid coming from a town of 1,000, you know, never basically been out of the town, the room with Chris Kingsbury got my eyes opened up.
Okay, so he wore 14 because his favorite drink was 7-7, correct?
I have no idea. That can't be right. I've never heard that.
That's what he told me.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, you never heard that?
All right.
We'll put that out
never
there. We'll ask if Kingsbury Kingsbury's on Twitter. You guys had, didn't you have a dude, James Winters, right? Was the big senior on your team?
Yeah.
I feel like that was right at the end of the Dr. Tom Davis thing when you guys remember, what was going on with the team? Who is James Winters? How did he play?
Well, James Winters was a phenomenal player, extremely athletic. I remember Van Arnsdale from the Phoenix Suns once asking me about James Winters because he'd seen him on tape, and he's like, man, if that kid was 2 or 3 inches taller, you know, he would have been a pro. So he was a very undersized forward. But James Winters was one of the unsung heroes in the history of our program because he was basically the only senior left after Chris Street was killed in the tragic accident. So yeah. You can imagine you've got an NCAA tournament team, AC Earl, Wade Looking Bill, James Winters, Kevin Smith, Val Barnes, and they go to the second round, I believe, the year before. Chris Street's in his accident. Everybody else graduates, a couple guys thrown off the team. So he comes in and has to play his senior year with a bunch of freshmen, underclassmen. Kenyon Murray was a McDonald's All-American, Mr. Basketball of the state of Michigan. Montier Glasper was out of Detroit. We had a pretty poor team that first year, and
how do you have two McDonald's All-Americans, a freshman, a sophomore, you, and this dude James Winters, and you guys weren't very good? How is that possible?
We just, that first year, you know, Kingsbury and I were freshmen. Kenyon and Montero were just young, lost a lot of close games, and then Winters was hurt probably the last 2 or 3 weeks of the year when the games were, the big games were on the line. So it just didn't work out, but yeah. He was incredible, and then the next couple of years we had pretty good teams.
Yeah, next year you had Kingsbury, you added Andre Woolridge, right? He's from Chicago, I think.
Oh
right?
Yeah,
big point guard, and Ryan Bowen came in as well. He was more off the bench. What was Dr. Tom like to play for?
He was wonderful. I always tell people I look forward to going to practice every single day. He made the game fun. We were a little bit ahead of our time. We pressed the entire game. So it seemed like, you know, 8-9 guys always got good minutes. We played so hard in that pressure defense that we would actually sub ourselves out because we couldn't play 40 minutes. We played a fast pace. Like today, the forwards had the green light to shoot the three-pointer. We never felt like we were out of a game. We played in a lot of games where we were down 20 or up 20, and then the games would come back to even because of just the style of play. He was great to play for. We had some good NCAA tournament runs. My career ended against Khalid El-Amin, Rip Hamilton, and UConn, who beat Elton Brand, Trajan Langdon, Avery in the national championship that year, but we lost in Phoenix in the Sweet 16. But Dr. Tom was phenomenal to play for. He would talk to you about business on the bus. He would talk to you about academics. He was into the arts. He was a very well-rounded guy. He has his PhD, so he was more of a businessman who coached basketball rather than just a basketball junkie who was just obsessed with the game.
Yeah, yeah. You hurt your back. Was it your junior year or your senior year that you hurt your back?
It started my sophomore year right in the preseason and just obviously was a struggle every year since. I ended up having to sit out 2 years, believe it or not. So I see some of these transfer portal guys and they're trying to play and transfer and get fifth and sixth years, and I know, unfortunately, what that's all about. But, yeah, that derailed a lot of goals and dreams, that's for sure.
Wait, you sat out. Okay, so you start that. Okay, so remind me, because you sat out the – yeah, you started in 93-94, but you sat out first 96-97, you played a couple games, and the next year you completely shut it down, and then you came back. So how
right.
That's like your sixth year at your university, and
correct.
And you decided not to leave. What's that like to come back and try and play? And keep in mind, you're playing with a completely different group of guys, right? Like it might as well be a different sport almost, considering the guys that you played with at the end of your career.
Exactly. So I'm in the locker room freshman, sophomore year at Iowa. Things are going great. Dean Oliver, who you mentioned as Mr. Basketball, he was like an eighth grader at Mason City. And he would come into the locker room, you know, to get autographs and hang out with the team because we were recruiting him at an early age. Ricky Davis, who ended up being a first-round pick of the Cavs, played with LeBron his first year, I believe.
Yep.
Also another star Iowa high school kid. So these guys are coming in the locker room when I'm a freshman and sophomore. And then fast forward to 1999 when I'm coming back to play that final year after being out 2 years, and I'm looking across the locker room, and they have lockers in the same locker room. And I just thought, man, I've been here forever. It was tough. It was a completely different game, completely different teammates. You're pretty emotionally scarred at that point, trying to perform, still having false pro aspirations and dreams, even though it's just not possible. So you're really emotionally, mentally not quite as sharp as you want to be. I just kind of took that last year to be a mentor, and it was Dr. Tom's last year, so it was a unique situation where he was a lame duck coach. So we were constantly a story that year, and we had a good year and made it to the Sweet 16. But the game had completely changed. It was bizarre, and I wouldn't wish it upon anybody.
And you had added Sam Oakey, right? Who is
yes,
right? Who is like
yes.
Kingsbury crazy? Only played your position. Another guy who should have played football. Give me your best Sam Oakey story.
Man, I forgot about Sam Oakey. That's crazy. Sam Oakey was another guy. I remember going with Kingsbury, Doug, in my parents' van to recruit Sam Oakey when he was playing at an event in Dubuque when he was a junior in high school. He grew up in Cassville. I mean, he was just an unbelievable athlete. An above-the-rim guy. When he ended up transferring to Iowa, I was shocked. I mean, it was crazy. It just seemed like I'd been there forever, and here's another guy who had played against Wisconsin transferring into Iowa. Unfortunately, he broke his wrist right there with five or six games to go in 1999. I mean, or we would have been even better. He was a great player. I can't think of any stories that, you know, crazy stories.
So high school – okay, so look, he was the one, the Cole Center, right, in Wisconsin?
Yeah.
The Senator Cole said he would donate the money to the arena after Sam Oakey committed to going to Wisconsin. Like, that's how big it was to get him. So I played in it was called the Coca-Cola All-American Game in Indianapolis. Bob Knight's son ran it, right? So I played the Magic's round ball. I didn't play McDonald's. The Magic's round ball. And I played in the Coca-Cola All-American game. And Sam Oakey was on my team. And yeah. I was 19. I was held back. I was 19 as a senior. And I had a fake ID. And Sam Oakey, I don't know if he had a fake ID, but he looked like a grown man. And so it was like the night of or the night before the game. I'm going to say the night of the game, like after the game. We play the game. It's fun. We go out afterwards. And Like, here's a kid, I'm guessing at the time he's 6'7", probably only 225 or something, just before he got really, it was still pretty strong. And he was so drunk, I had to, like, put him a kind of on my shoulder and help him, like, back to the hotel, which is a couple blocks away. And it was, like, moving a dead body. And and I remember, like, because we were roommates, I got him to the room, like, you get him in his bed, right? And he's just a mess, and he looks up at you, and he goes, good time, huh? Fun night. Let's do it again tomorrow night. And he's out. Like that. He's a nut. You guys, Iowa has this like mix, right? You play with J.R. Kotche. I took a visit with him to Notre Dame. He fell asleep on our visit in Ryan Hoover's dorm room when they were throwing us kind of a dorm party. Like J.R. Kotche, nicest dude ever. You had this like mix of like super nice farm dudes and hardcore party drinkers. That's how I look at Iowa basketball.
I mean, it's nice to talk to you to get to know the guys I played with. I just didn't know this side of it. This is hilarious. J.R. Kotche was a pro. People forget that. He was drafted in the second round by the Knicks.
Yeah.
Had he played today, Doug, I think as a true, like a stretch five, I think he would have been a first-round pick. I mean, his game was built for today's game, maybe not as much back then, but he had some knee troubles overseas, and he's now the Donald Trump real estate mogul of Peoria, Illinois. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
Yes, if you go to Peoria, the top real estate guy in that city is J.R. Kotche. He's doing really well. He's phenomenal. But I don't know. I remember Sam Oakey drinking a gallon of milk every night at pregame, you know, meal. He would literally get a pitcher of it and down the entire thing in front of us. But he was another McDonald's All-American. I played with three or four of those guys at Iowa. People used to criticize Tom Davis for not being able to recruit, and yet we've never had that many All-Americans on campus at one time ever before, so I guess that was kind of a myth.
Okay, so you're there 6 years, and and it's over. Then what'd you do?
That's a great question. What did I do right after school? I went into television. I worked at the local CBS affiliate out of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, for a couple years. Also sold pharmaceuticals. Married my high school sweetheart, Joanna Webb King. Her dad was a great football coach in the state of Iowa for many years. And started a family. So that's what happened. And got out of pharmaceuticals, farm with my dad, and I'm still doing television.
You didn't, like, was it because of the back? Or did you lose the love for it? Why hang it up?
It was strictly for the back. No, I did not. I loved the game. I was just in too much pain. I'd kind of run out of options. I was working out that summer for a team in Australia and ended up hurting it even worse to where I didn't have a choice anymore. So it basically made the decision for me. So, yeah, the injuries really damaged my career. The back injury is so brutal to deal with, and even in small ways, it's always bothering you, and it just wiped me out.
Yeah, yeah. So now you're covering the league. How much different is the Big Ten now from when you played?
It's different because for several reasons. It's really hard with Krzyzewski and Calipari and now Penny Hardaway. It's almost like, Doug, they take the top 20 guys every year and just leave the scraps for everyone else. So I remember my freshman year when I played against Grant Hill when he was, I think, a senior at Duke in a non-con game. And then you can look at the Big Ten. I went up against the Fab Five one night. Then you go up against Vashawn Leonard at Minnesota the next night. You go up against Deion Thomas at Illinois the night after that. Glenn Robinson then comes to town after you're already worn down, and you're a freshman, and then here comes the big dog who will drop 40 on you.
Right.
It felt like at that time, and especially when you and I were growing up in the late 80s, it seemed like the Big Ten got all of the elite players. Now, that's probably not the case, but it felt like there was a lottery pick every other night coming to Carver-Hawkeye Arena. So now it's a little bit different. We don't quite get those level of guys, and so there's a lot more parity and not quite as much attention on that. The new rules, obviously, have probably, in my opinion, as a fan, have hurt the Big Ten more than any other league as far as you can't grab and hold and you can't fight to the death. That's what I loved about it, playing in it and growing up and watching it. And the freedom of movement rules have totally changed the way the game is coached, the way the game is played, to where a kid like Nick Ward for Michigan State, Caleb Wesson for Ohio State, Matt Harms for Purdue, they can't even stay on the floor anymore. And yes, it's their own doing because they know the rules and the coaches train them that way. But when those, if those guys would have played when we played, you didn't even think about fouling out. I literally never thought ever about fouling out at a game. So those are a couple changes.
Yeah. You would have been a small ball center, though. You realize that, right? Like, you would have had fives on you.
No doubt. Would have been a five.
Yeah.
A small ball, what, stretch five? Is that the, what you'd call it?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you'd be, you'd have to, yeah, you'd be a, you'd just be a small ball five, yes. A stretch five is more just strict shooter. Like, you'd be a small ball five where you could step out and face up. You score in the post, you know, you rebound. The paint would be empty. Can you imagine the paint being empty and you playing at the five, catching the ball at the top of the key? Like, what would that be like?
It would just be unbelievable, and no one could touch you. You know, you just lower the shoulder and just attack, and you'd get a whistle one way or the other. It's it's really interesting to see how the game has changed. I mean, the first round now of the NBA draft, so many of these guys who I was growing up with would have been late first round pick, maybe early second round pick instead of lottery pick. So it's really fascinating. What's your take on it? Do you like all the new rules? Would it affected you? I mean, you led the nation in assists. It felt like every year you were playing.
I would say, the way guys play now. When I got to Notre Dame, this is a great question. When I got to Notre Dame, the way I played, you'd come down, you shoot three in transition, or come off a ball screen and make a play, or you get to the hoop. I didn't have a middle game, and from the moment I stepped on campus, John McLeod's whole thing was, Dougie, you got to have a mid-range game, right? Like, literally trying to rewire me. And, we ran an offense that was not a good fit for me. It was basically like a two-side motion, you know, almost blocker mover-esque set, you know, where the guys, you're on one side with a screener, and then the point guard's up top, and you almost never go through, or we'd run a set. And we didn't run, you know, a set secondary break. We just kind of playground in transition. So it was a real fight. So in terms stylistically, the style of basketball that's played now, by most coaches, would be much better for how I grew up playing. Now, having the lane wide open, I realized that because my shooting went to pots, you know, it would still be hard to get to the rim, but a lot different. I think it'd be better for me. I think the guys that it's hurt are the you guys, or the power forwards and the centers. And those are the guys that, you know, it's like you brought up Nick Ward. Perfect example. He's a first round pick 10, 15 years ago, right? He's a left-handed power forward. He's a first round pick. Now he doesn't have he's not going to be an NBA player, and he's not. It's a very different game. I agree with you in terms of the physicality of the Big Ten. I also think maybe the bigger one is guys leaving so early, and the Big Ten generally doesn't have, obviously Michigan's lost a ton, Michigan State's lost a bunch, Ohio State's lost some, but the Big Ten does have a tendency to have the best recidivism rate of any of the big conferences. I wonder, honest question, now, if you were in college now, before you hurt your back, you know, would you have gone to the NBA? Do you have any, I don't know if bitterness is the word, but do you have any regrets over staying as long as you did because your back got progressively worse and you didn't have a post-college basketball career?
That's a deep question. I think you, when we grew up, and when I went to the University of Iowa, you went to Notre Dame, there's no question that we had a desire to play in the NBA. I think everybody had a desire that was somewhat like that. But first and foremost, the desire was to win a national championship.
First and foremost, it was to get a college scholarship, right?
There you go.
Right.
Number one, yes.
So the first thing was like, man, I just want to get a scholarship. And you get a scholarship, yeah. And you felt like, and then I just want to start. And I just want to start.
Yes.
And I mean, I chose Notre Dame because I could start right away. And I'm still pissed I didn't start the first four games, even though I wasn't the better player in practice, you know? So then I want to start. Then you may want to start like, okay, now, like, I want to get to the tournament. I want to become all league, you know? I mean, all these things were important, whereas it does feel like the only thing that's really important is, man, I got to get to the league, and it feels like it's skipping steps.
I totally agree. It's a fascinating conversation. I mean, your legacy back then was to get a scholarship. I mean, that was such a big deal. If you got minutes, I mean, when I went to the University of Iowa, I was hoping to play by my sophomore or junior year. I mean, I was just hoping that it would open up like that. As a matter of fact, when I was being recruited by Michigan, I just looked at their roster, and I looked at the guys that were recruiting behind me, like Tractor Trailer, Mo Taylor, guys who were really good, and a lot of other bigger names. And I just thought, I'm not going to get the minutes here. I'm just like you going to Notre Dame. I've got to go someplace where I feel like I can get the minutes, and Dr. Tom tried not to recruit over people.
Yeah.
But then it was a matter of, you know, you got to hang a banner. You've got to win a Big Ten championship. You've got to go to a Final Four. Obviously, when the injury hit me my sophomore year, then everything in my mind changed. I was still in pursuit of those goals, but then it was like, man, I would hate to play and be good at this game and never get one paycheck from playing this game. And so then it becomes, you become a little more self-focused, unfortunately, when you get injured and you start planning your individual career. But it was never at all like it was today, although if we grew up in today's game, Doug, we'd probably think the same way.
Yeah. I mean, look, if I have any bitterness, I want to play one game. I want to play in the Final Four, came up one game short. Yes. I want to play in the NBA, and I did rookie camps and vet camps, but never the true training camp, so I never even played a preseason game. But I still would deem my career a success, not just for what I've been able to do post-career, but, like, look, I accomplished a lot of the things that people only dream of accomplishing. So I still have perspective, whereas, like, we are kind of raising kids to not understand, not, you know, they'll tweet out, like, truly blessed to get an offer from Duquesne University. Like, yeah, but that's not really how you feel. You should feel really, truly blessed to get an offer, but you don't. You feel almost entitled and, you know, almost entitled to get a shot in the league, and people don't realize how hard that is.
So, yes. So I've known you for many years, Doug, and always appreciated you and been very proud of your success and after playing the game. But I'll tell you, and you've got to give me a comment on this, the time that I really fell in love with you is when you went face-to-face with Marcus Fizer, the Big 12 tournament.
Wow.
Nobody went face-to-face with that guy. You got to fill me in on that story.
Okay, so Iowa State, the first year I'm in the Big 12, the year I sat out, I went to Notre Dame, I sat out, went to junior college, and then that year they played UCLA in the tournament. Great game in the tournament. I think in the second round, and UCLA beat them. What was the little guard's name? Holloway? He was tiny.
Yeah, J.C. Holloway, maybe?
J.C. Holloway. Man, he was tiny.
There you go.
So I remember I was at Malarkey's in Newport Beach, and I was... And I am not a big drinker. I do not go out much. But a buddy of mine, Clay McKnight, who is also transferring, sitting out, he went from UC Irvine to Pacific. We go down to Malarkey's. We're watching the NCAA tournament, and we start drinking, and we've been there all day, and we are hammered. And we're watching, and I remember Iowa State liking it and liking a little bit of the story, and I knew a lot about Iowa basketball. So my first year we're at Oklahoma State, we play. Tim Floyd's there. They're not very good. Play them on Big Monday. They did some weird shit where they'll like not guard you, and the best, whoever the best player was, they'd guard you and they would face guard you, not look at anybody else. And the guy who was guarding, like Adrian Peterson, our best player, he'd actually say, like, hands off, hands off, hands off, hands off, hands off. It was almost like they were programmed. They'd run like a triangle and two. So I actually played really well. I hit a bunch of shots and we kicked their ass. They weren't very good. The next year, it was Pfizer's first year, or maybe no, his second year. And they were a little bit better. It was Eustace's first year, and we kicked the hell out of them at our place. So we go up there my senior year, and we at Oklahoma State, we've only got beaten by double figures twice, I believe. I believe it, twice in 3 years. Once was Texas my sophomore year. They actually weren't very good, but they just blasted us, and I got benched at halftime because I talked back to coach. Well, he took me out for a mistake that wasn't my mistake, and I walked, and it was one of my first road games for him, and I was like, that's bullshit, and he's like, you know what's bullshit? You sit there, put on your sweats, and help me coach, right? So, anyway, my senior year, we're good. I mean, we're really, really good, and we go up to Ames, and, you know, They have Tinsley. They have Pfizer.
Oh, yeah.
They got a squad. Like, Shirley didn't even play on that team. Stevie Johnson's their center at, like, 6'5". He shot, like, 90% from the floor because they're all layups and dunks. Perfect college basketball team. And they kicked the living shit out of us. They beat us by, like, 19. And we were like, are you fucking kidding me? This team, like, we're better than them. So, Big 12 tournament. God, who we play? Oh, we play Kansas the first day. And we're going to win the league, and then we lost to Oklahoma last game of the year at home, last game in Gallagher. We're up 9. Coach subs me out because he thinks they're going to foul me. We just go in the tank. I don't take an open shot at the end of a game. Pass it to, anyway, we lose at home. So now we went from what would have been the 1 seed to, I think, the 4 seed, and we play Kansas. And we had beaten Kansas by 33. And we beat Kansas by 19.
Wow.
And we beat Kansas by 19. It was Heinrich and Collison were freshmen. And we kicked the dog piss out of them. And so the next day we play Iowa State. And they won the league. They're the 1 seed. We're the 4 seed. And I don't know if you've been to Kansas City, but Iowa State when they're shitty, Iowa State when they're good, Kansas City is filled with Iowa State fans. Like, they're crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's a home away from home.
It's unbelievable. So we walk in, and we brought a good – we probably bought 5,000 fans, and they probably brought 10,000 fans, and then there's like 5,000, you know, other fans for the other side of the bracket or whatever. Place is packed, this old Kemp Arena. So they're talking all kinds of shit. And early in the game, I had a pass. Fred Yonsine, who's our Swedish center sophomore, he's running down the middle of the lane – and I'm kind of dribbling right to left, and I throw kind of a no-look, like, through a bunch of arms. He gets it, he dunks it, and I am fucking woofing. I am running my mouth. Coming for you, we're coming for you, motherfuckers. We're coming for you, right? Because they won the league, and we're coming for them. And the next time, we like, it's kind of the same. Like, we were running Carolina secondary, but we would just, Fred was our rim runner. So instead of throwing it like through the defense, I throw it over the defense, and Freddie catches it, and he's about to dunk it, and Pfizer fouls the shit out of him. Like, and Marcus Pfizer was, I don't know what, 6'5", whatever, 230.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's built like you, and, I mean, he fouled Freddie hard. And so, you know, like, this kind of comes back to my Notre Dame. Like, John McLeod was big on standing up for your guys. Now, big guys are supposed to stand up for little guys, more than little guys.
Yeah.
So I get right in Pfizer's face, was like, you know, like, I don't know. I was just running my mouth. I'm like my head to his chest. Like, he could pummel me with his head, but I'm right up in his chest. The part that sucks about it was, I appreciate that you like that. We should have won the game. We got a 4-point lead with like 2.5 to go. And Desmond Mason, our best player, is an All-American. He fouls out. And we got a little selfish. And then they would do this thing to make me score, right? Where I drive in and they'd bluff at me and then get back. And almost leave like an open lane. And I missed a layup. And then I missed another one where I drove in and I was so hype that, like, I still have the picture of it. My hand was over the rim to like dunk it. And I was going to finger roll it. Instead, I turned it around to dunk it. And I hit the back of the rim like some high school idiot trying to dunk. And then I made one of two free throws late, whatever. Like, Joe Adkins, that way I was shitty. He was shitty. And we lost the game. The funny part of the story is we lose the game. We should have won the game. Mason shouldn't have fouled out, but we didn't do well, and we got a worse seed because of it. But we're walking out of the arena, and Tinsley and Pfizer had to do a piss test. We all had to, like, me, him, and I think it was Desmond Mason. We all had to do our drug test afterwards. And, like, you know how those games are. Like, you're so tired. It's the end of the season.
Oh,
you got nothing left. You're like, man, I need, like, to drink, like, 2 Gatorades just to work up a pee to fill out this bottle.
Right. You can't go.
Right.
Can't
so you're in the same room, and we just got done, like, woofing at these guys. And they're literally sitting 2 chairs across from us. They just won, and we just lost. And it's the most uncomfortable thing ever. So there you go. There's my Pfizer-Tinsley story.
So I didn't mean to bring up a bad memory. I forgot.
It's not a bad memory.
It kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
Right at the end.
Yeah, no, we fell
apart. Went after, my Marcus Pfizer story is when I came back my last year, I believe it was 1999. I believe that was his first year because what year was what
no,
year
that was
that,
his
game
that was his, that was second. That was 2000. So that was the second because he played 3 years. Because when they beat us, when they beat us in Ames, they were chanting MVP one more year. So I think he stayed 3 years. So it was his second year.
So he had a phenomenal. You're exactly right. I mean, they were the ultimate college basketball team. I ended up covering them a few years later when I worked for CBS2, and they lost to Michigan State to go to the Final Four. Which
that was the next year. That's the same year I'm talking about. That's the very next year.
That was the national championship game. Basically, those were the two best teams.
And I thought we were probably the third best, but because we lost in the other Elite Eight, we lost to Florida, who was, they were young, but they were stacked. I mean, like nine dudes that played in the NBA, and we just played like shit, and they had a better game plan, and we just didn't play well. But yes, you're completely right. Iowa State and Michigan State, that was like a national champ. That's when Eustacy went crazy and got thrown out and walked off the court and walked across the street and had a beer.
I was at that game. I was covering that game. It was mind blowing. Mo Pete and company. The year before, when Fizer was his first year on the team, Eustacy was trying to send messages. So it was probably the fourth or fifth game of the year where Iowa State and Iowa always play that big game, and it was in Carver-Hawkeye. And I remember watching the tape and studying the tape. But this is my sixth year. I don't have much strength anymore. I'm just more of a perimeter player, not a power guy. I'm watching Fizer on tape. And I tell the guys, there's no way I can hang with this guy. Like, he's going to beat me to sleep. He's like kind of a Charles Barkley college type of player.
Yeah.
And so we get in the game, and he picks up a couple quick fouls. And Eustacy throws him in the doghouse, probably plays him 5 to 10 more minutes the rest of the game, and we beat him by, let's say, 10 points. All because he was sitting on the bench. So that's how Eustacy kind of was, the mind games. And also a good lesson, you just show up and play no matter who you're playing, and you never know how the story's going to go.
No question. Okay. I thought they did a great job with Tinsley. He couldn't shoot, but they would run stuff for him to get post-ups and mid-range stuff. And so they would hide that he couldn't shoot at all, and that allowed Tinsley to be Tinsley. And he was a really hard cover for me. He was so big. And he if you gave him ground, like, when people would play off of me, I was too small, so the only way to do that is to beat him in transition to shoot. And I wasn't a good shooter, and Eddie had no confidence in me, so I had no confidence. But he was so big.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So you played for McLeod.
Yep.
You played for Sutton. Who are a couple other guys, I mean, with your coaching mind, now your analyst mind, who are a couple other guys from that era who you would have loved to have played for a year?
Well, I'd love to play for Self. I think he's awesome.
For Bill Self?
Yeah. I mean, he lets you play.
He was in Illinois, right?
No, he was at Tulsa. Tulsa.
Oh, it was at Tulsa. Okay.
Yeah, he was at Tulsa. They went to the Elite Eight, too. They were a great team. They lost to North Carolina. But Self, he was hard on you, but he let his guards kind of go and let guys play even then. I almost played for Izzo. I think I would have been kind of the pro. If I would have taken – Izzo called me from the delivery room of his first baby. I put the doctor on the phone, and I would have been his first point guard because my freshman year was the first year he was head coach. Had I taken that, I'd be a head coach in college right now, right? Like it would have been perfect. But I didn't even visit because Traylor didn't visit and Albert White didn't visit. But I would have loved playing with Antonio Smith and Jason Klein and that crew. And you know, Mateen might not have ever gone there because he was the next year and he only went there because of the car accident with Michigan on his visit. Who else? I always thought I wanted to play at Duke. White point guard, yep. Duke. Bobby Hurley was my idol. Like that was kind of an easy one. That was when I would have. Arizona didn't recruit me, and I had friends that went to Arizona. They took Jason Terry instead of me, and eventually Mike Bibby ahead of me. And that would have been amazing just because of the way they played. Or UCLA, and I didn't go to UCLA because, you know, Herrick did recruit over guys, and he didn't care. And he would tell you, like, five guys, Dougie. We play the five best guys.
Right.
UCLA
right.
High post offense, not the only offense, just the best, you know? All right, last thing. I got a couple more for you. Last thing. Your favorite arena to play in?
Back when I played, I would say Illinois and Iowa had a huge rivalry over the Deion Thomas situation. That place was nuts.
Yeah.
It's not the same anymore. And then Hilton Coliseum at Ames, you played in there. That was an incredible place to play outside of Carver-Hawkeye Arena.
Okay. Best player you thought you ever played against?
Freshman year, it seems like I played against so many legends. I would say Glenn Robinson, far and away in college, was the best player I ever played against. I've talked to many assistant coaches who had to scout him in the 90s. They all would agree that he was far and away the best player of that era in the Big Ten. Played against Grant Hill, like I mentioned before, but he wasn't Grant Hill of the Pistons. When he was in college, he was not on the attack, where Big Dog would attack you on every possession. My freshman year, which is the only time I played him, I made the mistake. I was playing well against him. I was for some reason, I was feeling my oats, and I was in a defensive stance, and I said, come on, Big Dog, come on, come at me. I don't know why I would have ever said that. In the middle of the game, Doug, he starts chuckling at me. In the middle of the game, ends up with 38, dunked on us multiple times. Glenn Robinson wasn't even close.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you, when, like, you have a family, how many kids?
I have three little girls, 14, 11, and 8.
When people tell them, come up to them and say, man, your daddy was a great player, right? Which is always feels cool, right? How do you want to be described to your kids?
So I've taken the approach, my wife and I, we don't put pictures out and jerseys and trophies and things like that. I don't know why. Because when I go to my other teammates' houses, I absolutely love that more than anything else, to see all the memorabilia. But I just wanted them to grow up not knowing much about it, just so they didn't have to live up to any false expectations. And that may be wrong, that may be right, but that's sort of been the way we've done it. So my 14-year-old is now, because of Twitter, because of the Big Ten Network, you know, being on television, she'll constantly be getting asked things like that. So what's the question? How do I want to be remembered, or when they say something?
How do you want to be described?
Just as a great teammate and a great Hawkeye. I mean, my dream was always to play for the Hawkeyes, and that's what I want to be remembered as.
Were the wrestlers tougher than you?
They were. They may have been clinically insane, right? I mean,
yes.
Great guys,
yes.
But John Streep, our legendary trainer, always used to say the difference between the wrestlers and the rest of the athletes is that they partied just as hard as everybody else, but at 5 the next morning they'd be in the weight room lifting and working out while everybody else would be sleeping in. I grew up in the Dan Gable era at Iowa.
Sure.
So, you know, they won a national championship every year, and it's hard for basketball guys to love wrestlers, but in Iowa it wasn't hard with Dan Gable. Maybe the second week I was on campus, I went up and I asked Gable if I could ride the exercise bike in the wrestling room, just because I thought it would be more intense than riding it out on the basketball court. And I think that's the first time you'd ever had a basketball guy request to be able to work out in the wrestling room. But he said yes. And so then he gets on the bike next to me, Doug. And I ride it for half an hour, and I'm riding it hard, but he tries to do it harder than me. He's trying to break the machine to show me that he still got it.
Yeah.
And I don't. So that's kind of their mentality. Iowa wrestlers were as tough as they got. It was incredible.
Oklahoma State, too. I always say this. Three things that'll survive the nuclear holocaust: Twinkies, cockroaches, and wrestlers. And wrestlers. Hey, man, this is great. Awesome catching up with you. Can't wait to break some bread, do some stuff in the Big Ten Network with you. Thanks so much for being part of All Ball.
Thanks a lot, Doug. Appreciate you.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
My thanks to Jess Settles, one of the all-time Hawkeye legends. Of course, you can see him on the Big Ten Network. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.